Shouts out to everyone who's live with us right now. We're gonna talk about some things. Isn't that right, Casper?
Some thing things.
Yeah. So stay with us. It's gonna go down. We're gonna talk about some DJing stuff, some COVID stuff, a bunch of stuff.
A whole bunch of stuff. I think there's a lot of stuff to actually talk about.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
Maybe you need to lose some weight. I need to do.
Well, we're both in the same boat. Don't worry, man.
Yeah, this is for real. This camera gives me like 10 pounds heavier. I look at myself in the mirror, and I don't see myself like that. But I look in the camera.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild, man. I'm going to start the audio podcast from right there when we start talking about our weight. Welcome, everyone, to Salon de Speedy Jr. Welcome to Speedy Jr.'s Lounge. I'm here live with my good friend, the infamous DJ Casper from New York City. He's in the building. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. I wanted to get you on the show because, first off, you know, you already know what's going on in this COVID lockdown world that we're living in. And you are a DJ who has survived through a lot of adversity in your life. And, you know, I wanted to get you on the show to talk about that. And most recently, you are actually on the personal side of life, if you don't mind me sharing with everyone here. You shared it on your socials anyway. You are a coronavirus survivor.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So I want to talk about that as well, but I want to get to that because that's recent news. So we'll get to that at the end. But what I want to get into now is just for anyone who's not familiar about the life and times of DJ Casper. I mean, the resume speaks for itself. International touring DJ, touring Florida, New York, New Jersey, Jersey Shore, Uptown. You're a veteran. Sirius XM satellite DJ on Caliente. You used to be Yandel, Wisin Yandel's DJ. You DJed for Don Omar. You used to tour with him. You used to be on his show. It's a reality show, TV show that he had. So I mean, just an extensive resume. How did you start DJing and how did it come about?
Well, with me, started DJing was back in I would say it was about 99, 98. You know, I just started loving music. You know, I was always inspired by the movie Juice. Right. As you remember back in the day, you know, Tupac Shakur, you know, I used to love that, like, I love that show. But, you know, I came from a pretty decent sized family. I have, four sisters. I'm the oldest out of the four. My dad, you know, worked one job to support, you know, all five of us, which was kind of hard. My mom kind of was into a lot of drugs and was never around. As you know, from the whole Nicki Jam and Ganador, it was a similar situation with me. I just think in that era back in the 80s, there was just so much drug movement and a lot of people actually using drugs at that time.
Right.
But, you know, I kind of took my life in a way of positivity and just try to do the best that I can to help my sisters because my dad had to, you know, work double shifts, overnights. He worked in a factory, so I would have to actually take care of my sisters. So, you know, it was kind of difficult for me at to the point where it was overwhelming. Two of my sisters ended up moving down to Philly and Camden, which were, you know, with our family on my mother's side. And my other two sisters ended up staying here with me. So that was pretty much in my childhood. I was always pretty much a fat kid until now. I regained the fatness. But, you know, it's just
fatness in the COVID times.
Yeah, it's in the COVID time. So I've gained pretty much weight on that. But from there, you know, in 99, I started doing local parties. I got my first break, was DJing actually back in the day at Speed, in New York City.
Right.
At that time I had just turned 20, was still underage and DJing. even before 99, I was still doing a little house parties, little local bar stuff.
Right.
But it wasn't as big as, you know, big nightclub like Speed. I ended up doing Webster Hall or Sound Factory, you know, doing parties like that. I would say in 2002, 2003, I just kept on doing local clubs, you know, just making an impact name for myself. Again, the name DJ Casper, which a lot of people don't understand. I know there are a lot of people out there saying, well, I know another DJ Casper. I'm going to set the record straight on that.
There's a bunch of other, like, Speedy Jr. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. So at the time when I was actually DJing, we had AOL.
Right.
And even before AOL, when we just had dial-up, so we didn't really have internet. So, yeah. And when I go on to, you know, when we start going through AOL, I could never find anything with DJ Casper on it. So I was like, all right. So the one guy who made a hit song, the Cha-Cha Slide, he actually did his in 2001. My first party was in 2000, which my name was on it. So in reality, I was the first Casper to go public.
Right.
On flyers. So in reality, if I really wanted to pursue it, I could actually tell him and say, hey, look, I could take it legally. This is my flyer from 2000. This is when you dropped that song in 2001.
Right.
So my name, I had the name first. My name was publicized first. So, but at the end of the day, we can't do that due to simple, the movie Casper, we're not allowed to trademark that. So right. That, because of the simple fact of the movie, it fits in the same tier as entertainment as DJs.
Yeah.
So we can't copyright or trademark that at all. I can trademark my logo, which, yeah, great. It's awesome. I can do that. But again, people as DJs and any DJs out there young, you know, try to create your name a unique name where it's just going to refer to you and what type of name that you want to have. Right. Don't, you know, the best thing is to Google, see who has it. If somebody has it, hey, change it to something else. But I still see a large number of people still doing that. Like, they're still calling. I saw a kid who was 24 years old and in the Heights, and he's calling himself DJ Casper, which makes zero sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, dude, he's 21 years old. You're not going to look all the DJ Caspers, and I could say I was really one.
It's like, I have a friend, his name is Extreme. And I'm like, dude, you know how many Extremes there are DJs in the world? I mean, there's a bunch of Speedies, DJ Speedies in the world, but there's only one Speedy Jr. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but the only problem with that, if you look at the other DJ Casper, none of them superb to what I've accomplished in my life. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
They have never been to Germany, Paris, Switzerland, China, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never been to DJ in Paris or over 500,000 people. You know, so, you know, you kind of get looked at when people start looking for me.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be like, oh, so you're the one who works for Don Omar. And they'll be like, no, you kind of hurt yourself, because then they start looking at you like you're a fake. You know, so that's only the bad thing that I've experienced in my life when it came to about DJing. But, you know, we're going to fast forward straight to 2012, where that's when I actually met Wisin y Yandel.
Okay, yeah, that would be my next question. How did that come about that you were actually involved in a lot of production of their tracks at one time as well?
Yeah. So I remember meeting. It actually started with Looney Tunes.
Mm-hmm.
So I met Looney Tunes. I was helping out with a couple people from KTU. At this time, I was just always in a club, because at this time in 2002. I really blew up. So I backtracked to 2010 when I really took off into New York City. I was doing a lot of bars, Dubai, Taj, China Club. I was doing so many clubs
right in
New York City. So we were getting a lot of these celebrities coming in, Tito Bambino, Hector's father, Wisin y Yandel, Looney Tunes, who's known me for years, kind of put me on with Wisin y Yandel when the Mas Flow came out.
Right.
We did an in-store at Record Town in Times Square. So, you know, at that time we started talking and we started collaborating. So, you know, I remember we worked on a couple songs off the Pabundo album, which was their first real hit album, which is the Pabundo album in 2012. At
Yeah,
that
that
time,
changed the game for them album.
exactly. And at that time, what was the same time Machete record label came out.
I remember my the music.
Yeah, it was Machete Music, and that was when they were the first label under it was Looney Tunes, Más Los Dos, and then came out Palmundo album under the label at that time. They end
You're
up
dropping
having
info right now. You're dropping history for these people right now.
yeah, so it was a great time. You know, I've traveled to different countries with Wisin Yandel. That's actually where me and Don Omar actually met. Were on tour when I was with Wisin Yandel.
Wow.
So, you know, at that time, you know, I was with them. We would visit different places. I did, you know, do some engineering, some sound work off the Pabundo album, which they gave me a gold plaque, like the little frame with the record. It was a Noche de Sexo with Romeo, which we did the record in Jersey. In Bellevue, New Jersey, was a record. It was actually a studio there. That's where we actually did it. Romeo was in the studio when we did it. But
Why does
that
everyone live in New Jersey, bro?
but it's so funny because that collaboration. So I used to do a lot of the Puerto Rican Day parades in Manhattan. So that's why at that time in 2010, 2012, I was in there. So I was getting booked for nightclubs, parades. I was just traveling all over the United States, you know, just doing so many different parties. So I remember doing a parade with Tito and Bambino and some other artists, but the one that really stuck out was with Wisin Yandel in 2012. Romeo was actually walking by, and Wisin Yandel was walking the opposite side, like the opposite side of each other. And they kind of caught, like, oh, you're Wisin Yandel. Oh, no, you're Romeo. So at this time, it's just when Romeo had just came off of, you know, Aventura. You know, he was working on a solo album. So they started talking, and we decided to end up. They end up wanting to do a song called Noche de Sexo, which also was a great hit as well to this day. But yeah, that's what pretty happened. Pretty much happened with Wisin Yandel.
Wow. So then you decided to, did you leave Wisin to join Don Omar? Or how
No,
did that happen? Did you have
so
a
at that time,
downtime after that?
so with Wisin Yandel, it was I just had a lot of conflicts. I had a lot of conflicts with the management. There was a guy who was the manager of Wisin Yandel, but the role manager was a good friend of mine. So he was always about me. He saw what I was doing. His name was Andy Martinez, who actually was, you know. Jerry Rivera's manager, Yandel's manager. He's actually Yandel's manager at the current moment. So the gentleman that was their manager kind of didn't want me to be a part of the whole team, but Yandel and Wisin was kind of telling me, now he's a part of the family. You know, he kills it when he DJs. You know, he just felt like his original DJ should have been a highlight, you know. And that we'll get into that on the Don Omar side with a lot of hostility among DJs. Yeah, so you know, with Wisin Yandel, it was a great experience in my life. I owe it to them, Wisin Yandel, great bunch of people. I spent a great time with them, you know, a good 2 years. I did a mixtape that went crazy with them because that was a time where they were hot. And you know, so in 2014 I kind of, kind of actually, it was 2013. I parted ways. So I just kind of yeah. So I kind of parted ways from them. But and I just kept on at that time. I just kept on starting doing nightclubs.
So then, so when did the opportunity to join Don Omar's camp come up?
So my opportunity after like 2 years, just doing a lot of nightclubs in the city, LQs. Everybody knows them,
Well,
the famous LQs.
first off, before you continue, because people are commenting, and Luis Gonzalez said, "Cool, Casper." He says, "Para for him, tú eres uno de los mejores. You're one of the best." And Steven says, "Raiders Nation, baby." as he likes
to call it. That's right. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah, so
let's get it back. And so the meeting, how did the Donemar opportunity happen?
All right, well, so, you know, after the whole Weezy and the Undead, you know, I just said, you know what, I'm just going to go do my own thing.
Okay.
Started again doing LQs, Copacabana, a lot of this stuff.
The hot spots in the city. Yeah.
I was at that time, I converted myself to a true Latin DJ. So I was mostly playing, you know, just merengue, bachata, salsa, reggaeton, you know, and a little bit of hip hop. So I was doing a lot of the big clubs. Like every weekend I was booked. I was doing Dubai, Taj, China Club. I was doing a lot of clubs. So I remember I was DJing a night at Latin Quarters. It was in 2014. It just became 2014. It was like December 2013 going into 2014. Donemar was doing a show, and he was doing a show in Latin Quarters.
Mm.
So he was promoting the Meet the Orphans album. At that time, you know, I went into the backstage, you know, and he saw me. He was just like, he went berserk. He was like, "Cap it." He was like, "Yo, I haven't seen you in years. I haven't seen you in like 5, 6, 7 years." And I said, "Hey, man, it's always been a great and an honor be beside you. You're a great, awesome person." I started laughing when I said, "Bro, I'm not a groupie, bro. You know that. You know how I am. You know what I'm saying?" But you know, I appreciate you. You know, I've been doing a lot of stuff and traveling, doing a lot of clubs, doing some online radio. And he's like, "Listen, I want to meet you in the office." Which his office was in Garfield, New Jersey. So he tells me, "Hey, look, let's have a meeting. I want to talk to you about some things that I want you to be a part of my company." Which at that time, I was like, "All right, great, cool." So I went down to his house in Alpine, New Jersey, and we just had a long conversation. And from there, you know, I started traveling with him on tour with the Meet the Orphans tour. And then he signed me to the label. And you know, from there, you know, we just had a lot of great atmosphere, good energy, and it was just a good time.
And so as far and when that opportunity happened, you were also included in his reality show. Was that a big opportunity for you as well there?
I mean, it was great. It was something, it was pretty awesome because, it took everything that we were on the tour. We were on tour for about a month and a half on the bus. So everything was on a buff, and it was just insane, man. The bus was just It's going to city to city, state to state, and just be able to, you know, just DJ. I would open up every show that he would do. So every show he would perform, I would open up for him, and it was a great time. It was an awesome time. You know, the reality show was great. It was fun. But I was like the Snooki of the reality show. I was the one Yeah, so if you ever saw the trailer, he says, Donemar says, que él piensa que es uno de los DJs más grandes, que no, que él no sabe que yo soy la única persona que lo soporta. So in other words, he say that he supports me. But he thinks that I'm a big DJ when I'm not, but he's the only one that really supports me and shows me love.
Wow. So that was a great experience for you. So the end of that relationship with Don Omar for you, was that because you just needed to grow again, do your own thing again?
The Don Omar thing, it was something that he started doing his online radio. It was called Red Link Radio, which he would jump onto the show. But the problem happened was with Donemar when I separated, mm-hmm. is that he didn't want me to move. I ended up moving to Florida beginning of 2015.
So you were a Floridian. I forgot that you was in Miami. Yeah. You were touring in Miami doing the beach circuit.
Yeah. So the whole beach circuit. So like 2014, you know. When I was with him in 2013, around there, in 2014, like toured going almost to, yeah, about 2014, I decided to, you know, leave the company. There was too much hostility. DJ's getting upset because he had his own personal DJ would get upset that I was DJing, but Don Omar allowed me to say the official DJ of Don Omar's Orfanato, which I was signed to their label.
Right.
So at that time, it was just a lot of hostility. His DJ would call I remember DJing in Florida on the radio. He calls the program director and tells him, "No, I'm Don Omar's official DJ." Program director told him, "Said, I didn't say on the radio that he's official DJ. We said one of the DJs of Don Omar's Orfanato. We right. never said that." So he was just a lot of jealousy that he caused him to, you know, full of aggression because I was traveling the world to Switzerland, to Germany, to Paris.
Yeah.
You know, I was traveling Switzerland literally like 3 times a month.
Right. And you had to make those gigs happen. You know, those things don't happen, you know, by magic.
Yeah, like it doesn't like it, he thought that, oh, just because he's Don Omar's DJ that he's going to get bookings. No, yeah. These promoters knew me from. Yeah, so these promoters knew me from working with Wisin y Yandel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's just like I rebounded it back to somebody else. So remember, promoters out of the country or out of the state, okay, they're not going to book you if they never heard you spin.
Oh, so say that one more time for all the DJs watching this right now.
That somebody from another state, another country, yeah. will not book you if they never heard you spin. I've DJed in different places. So right. I had a booking agent in Germany, mm-hmm. which he was involved in a lot of clubs in Switzerland, Paris, all of Europe. He had a lot of clubs that he worked and he put me on, but he heard me spin. So he vouched for me in all the,
right.
all the venue.
Yeah.
He had the end. So when I would go to the venue and rock out there, people would go crazy. They're like, yo, this guy killed it, murdered it. Yo, it was awesome. Like the experience was great. That I was with it. But again, jealousy, you envy somebody, it's always gonna cause problems.
Yeah.
And the only thing I can tell these DJs out here, mm-hmm. just stay humble, follow your own path. Don't try to hit up promoters off of other DJs, Facebooks,
mm-hmm.
you know, all stuff like that, because they're gonna what DJs don't understand, that when you contact a DJ when you contact a promoter from a DJ's Instagram or Facebook,
right,
they can look at the mutual followers and say, oh, he follows Casper. Why is this nigga hitting me up? So they're going to hit me up right. and say, yo, why is this dude hitting me up? Asking about, oh, that he knows you. Yo, you're just putting yourself like you're desperate. Mm-hmm. Like, no, it doesn't work that. Your talent speaks for itself.
That's right.
I might not say that I'm the best DJ in the world, but I know how to move a crowd.
Right.
And I know how to keep a crowd. And that's probably the most important thing out of a DJ. You could do all this scratching. You could do all these different things. But if you can't keep the people there, they're just going to leave.
Yep. And we have good days and bad days. But you got to know, you know, what you're doing. You know what I mean? You got to know what you're playing, what you're programming, and when to play it, how to play it, and why to play it.
No, 100% with that. I agree with that. I agree with that. I agree.
So let's talk about DJ Casper now, 2020, pre-COVID.
Oh, man.
I tell you, man, you were doing all these other states. Like, you were doing Memphis, right?
Tennessee. Nashville.
Yeah.
Nashville, Kentucky, Indianapolis.
Oh, man, you were all over the Midwest.
Yeah, I just got back from Chicago. I remember I did NBA All-Star Weekend in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
No, that was a pretty good experience at the NBA All-Star Weekend in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my bookings right now. It's just been really tough because I had a residency here in right. New Jersey, which, you know, they was paying me well. I couldn't leave it, you know, and I had these Cuban promoters. I've been doing a lot of Cuban parties called Jersey Promotions.
Really?
Which
in Jersey? There's a lot of Cubans in Jersey, though?
Huh?
There's a lot of Cubans in Jersey now?
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Yeah?
Man.
Yeah? Wow. So you've been doing all that Cumbaton, all the Micha and Jacob.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah, and Chulo, you know, all that stuff.
That's wild. Yeah. There's in Jersey. Look at that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it was a great experience. They treated me well. Big shout out to my boy Machete and Jersey Promotions. I mean, you know, they've been great. They've been super great. Again, you know, I can go back to 2015, but I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Miami, so I was doing a lot of the big clubs on the beach.
Yeah, so you know you already know the flavor of that music that you need to do.
Yeah, I kind of then I, from Latin I switched and I went to hip hop and commercial and top 40.
Oh, wow.
So I end up DJing at Dream, Live, Bamboo, Room Service, all the clubs on the beach.
Right.
So I was there about a year. I was there for a year. So I was still getting booked out of state. So I went to Colombia, I went to Germany again. And then my contract ended in Miami. So the club that I used to DJ at, they used to fly me out there, was called Ibiza in Nashville. So they used to book me on a regular. So I was really cool with the owner. Like, he was super cool with me. And, you know, one day, this is crazy. This is a true story. Check this out. So I'm just laying in my little studio in Miami, Florida, in my little studio, and he pokes me, the owner. He
like
pokes
me. Like on Facebook?
On Facebook, yeah.
He like pokes me on Facebook. I thought that he went to your house and really poked you.
No. So he pokes me on Facebook. So, you know, I'm following him on social media, and he pokes me on Facebook. I'm like, why is he poking me? So I poke him back. So he pokes me again.
Right.
I'm like, and so I said, you know what? Let me just hit him up and say, yo, why you keep poking me, LOL? And he starts laughing. So I end up calling him, and we just start having a conversation. And he's just telling me, hey, man, look, I'm going through stuff. I'm going through a lot of stuff right now. My DJ's going about to leave. So remember, there was one DJ for the whole night. So he's been with them for like the past 2 years.
No.
You know, before they had another DJ was Brian D, which he was there for like 5 years, which he was the only there. So he got rid of him. Some situation happened. So his other DJ ended up moving to Atlanta. So he's like, damn, I don't have a DJ. Now, you also got to understand, Nashville, there weren't that many good DJs. Oh. You know, now, I mean, you're starting to see a little bit of DJs upcoming.
Right.
And I was telling him, he was like, yeah, I'm not going to have a DJ. I don't know what to do. You know, I said, well, I'll move to Nashville. I mean, I'm not DJing out in Miami. My contract just ended like a month ago. So I said, he's like, really? Are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'll move. But yeah, you're going to have to find me an apartment. I live in a studio, you know, so I live in a studio. So, you know, I grabbed my stuff and then drove up to Nashville, and I ended up spending there till May of 2016. And and I ended up DJing there. It was a great experience. I mean, the vibe was different, man. Like, the people, there were a lot of Hondurans, a lot of Mexicans, but they were so supportive, man. Like, to this day, they still have a lot of love for me.
Wow, that's great, man. That's great. That's awesome, man. That's an awesome experience, especially when you find a market where people like you, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of tough because, you know, I had a problem in Kentucky. I have no shame, no filter, you know.
Warning.
Warning. There's a lot of animosity, I would say, toward other DJs. Like, especially if you're not even from there and they book you from out of state,
yeah,
you know, they kind of get aggressive. They get jealous.
Mm-hmm.
I've
had that problem too. Like, I'll go to when I used to be booked a lot in North Carolina, Georgia, a lot of the South that I used to get bookings. And I go there and the local guys will just be like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, just kind of like, oh, here, you know?
Yeah, well,
bad attitudes and.
Exactly. So the reason for that is that, you know, people, when you're taking money out of their pockets, that's the only thing they have is to, you know, be upset.
Yeah.
You understand? To be frustrated that they're not getting the bookings, or if they are DJing with you, to know that they're getting, that you're getting more money than they are.
Right. DJ Casanova, you know? Carlos says, what's up?
Tell him I said what's up.
You just told him.
Yeah. Well, I just told him and say, well, that's my man. That's my man from Nashville. He's an awesome guy.
Nice.
I see a couple people from Nashville. Based out, I see Julia. I see Alex. He's also the radio personality out in Nashville.
Oh, nice.
Alex Ramos is the personality, radio personality. It's called Activa. Yeah, it's called Activa. It's one of the big radio stations in Nashville. Most of the demographic music is like norteño, banda, a lot of the Mexican stuff. They do play reggaeton, some of the bachata and stuff like that. But again, like as you can see, there's a lot of people from Nashville to this day, still so much love, and I have the most utmost respect to the people in Nashville out there, man.
Awesome, man. So let's talk about Kentucky. See, you talk about Kentucky.
I think I switched.
I want to. Give me the juice, Casper. Come on, give me the juice.
Just give me the juice. Pause on that. All right, pause on that. All right. So Kentucky, beautiful state, beautiful. It's a beautiful state. A lot of open fields, beautiful horses. Just a great environment. It's just there were some people there where, again, the animosity when they see how successful you are and who have you worked with. With Don Omar, Wisin Yande, Tito Bambino, Alexis, and traveling the world.
Right. You got a resume.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They look at me as intimidation.
Mm.
So because they saw that I moved from Miami to New York, to Nashville, stuff like that, they kind of get scared because they only need an owner to come up and says, which happened in Nashville, and I'll tell you what I made. I'll spill out the juice. I'll tell you what I made, okay? So every weekend, and a lot of the people on social media right now knows the beast. I would make on Friday nights wasn't their busiest nights, but it was decentable.
Mm-hmm.
I would DJ 2 hours, make 300.
Okay.
On Saturday, I would DJ 2 hours and make 500.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2 days, I was bringing $800. Plus, they were paying half of my rent, which my rent was $1,200.
Oh, well, they were paying you. So they were paying
Exactly. They were paying my health insurance as well.
Oh, nice.
So with the people in Kentucky, with the DJs in Kentucky, they get jealous. You know, there's a lot of good DJs out there that I know. DJ Javi, he's actually, you know, part of your La Mecla. You know, Javi's a great kid, almost like a little brother to me. DJ K, Mario, and you got to remember, Kentucky's weird because you have Lexington, Kentucky, and you have Louisville, which I think it in both cities, you know. So, but there's a lot of DJs in different areas where it's just a lot of animosity and just a lot of hatred just because they see that people start following you. And that's the biggest thing that they hate is that they start not liking you because people are following you. And that's what they don't want. They don't want you to take their people. Because what happens is, and what happened in Kentucky, or even in Indianapolis, when I don't DJ in Indianapolis anymore, it's just that the DJs feel that if I start building a relationship with their people, they're going to start asking to bring me more and more and more. So they don't want that. So they don't want that right. negative feedback because they're DJs themselves.
Right.
So that makes them look bad. You understand what I'm saying?
Interesting.
So that's why I see a lot of DJs. Look, if you're going to be a DJ, be a DJ. If you're going to be a promoter / DJ, don't bring a DJ out to your city and get upset that people are starting to like the way he DJs. Because that tells me that it didn't matter about you bringing me. You were just trying to make me fail.
Right. Or he was trying to make himself shine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So, but
that happens a lot. That happens a lot. You know, unfortunately, you've just everywhere you go, you got to show and improve. Just that's what it is.
You know, it is true, and you know, it's great. I mean, I've enjoyed my life. I spent a lot of good times, you know, with a lot of good people around the world, and even to Australia. Australia was awesome. Wow. It was awesome. Paris was awesome. Wow. You know, there were a lot of good times. There were a lot of good times.
Excellent. So I know you're reflective about your DJ career, but I want to get to now hitting the personal side of your experience with the coronavirus. When did you start feeling sick? And how do you think you might have caught it?
Big shout out to Australia. I got to two people from Australia. Renee, what's up, Renee?
Awesome.
It's from Australia. I see Beatrice. She's saying what's up.
Nice.
You know, but coronavirus.
Yeah.
Oh man, what can I tell you about the goddamn coronavirus? Makes you
start
not want
to drink
coronas anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Let's start from the beginning.
When did you start feeling sick,
and how do you think you might have gotten it?
I think personally, I got it. I got the coronavirus from, I'll be honest with you, I think it was from a pharmacy. I went to the pharmacy, like a Walgreens,
mm-hmm.
and I was paying, and you know the little pads, right?
Right.
That you put in your credit card and you see where you're paying and all that.
Mm-hmm.
When I touched that, I think I touched my face or I sneezed, and I kind of like spread it here, and I just remember starting feeling funny on a Monday. I started getting like a mild cough. I was congested. My eyes were burning.
Wow.
I just started taking medicine, whatever, and I just started drinking hot water and lemon. And I started, in my mind, I was just like, at this time, the pandemic was going crazy. So right. I was like, you know what? I was reading something about, you know, drinking the hot, you know, honey and hot water or ginger, hot water and lemon. Mm-hmm. And I said, let me take some of that. Maybe, you know, if I do have it, let it pass down. So Tuesday came around. I'm still getting this little mild cold, little cough. And I'm like, why the hell am I still caught? And so I'm thinking, the only thing you could think of is like allergies. Because right. sometimes you get an allergy, you start coughing. You know, you're like a little itch in your throat. I'm saying to myself, it's probably my allergies. But I've been getting home. I'm coming home and my eyes are burning. And I'm like, yo, why is my eyes burning?
So while you were feeling these symptoms, were you still like working and going about your life?
Yeah. I was living a regular life. And, you know, I was pretty much like asymptomatic. Like I didn't really have bad symptoms. Like the symptoms I had were similar to what allergies are.
Right.
You know, so I was just kind of, you know, just a little like, I may be under the weather with some allergies, and I started taking allergy. I would go to sleep. And so Wednesday came around. And my cough is, and now my sinuses, now I'm getting stuffiness, and now I'm getting like a lot of headaches, and I'm like, so I end up going all the way till Thursday. I drank a coffee, and it tasted like metallic. It tasted metallic. So I'm like, why is the coffee taste so bad? I mean, I know Dunkin' Donuts coffee's not all that great, but
right.
Damn, is that bad?
But it really was like that bad. Like you were like, what the hell?
Yeah. Wow. So during the day, like I end up ordering some pollo con arroz con gandules, and that tasted fine.
Right.
But anytime I drank something hot, it would turn like metallic. I'm like, what the hell? So that was on Friday.
Right.
That was on Friday.
On a Friday.
So we already went
Monday. So it's established feeling bad on a Monday. All the way to Friday now that you got the metallic taste in your mouth. So that's a whole week.
Exactly.
5 days.
So Saturday hit with this coronavirus, right? It hit. I lost the taste of smell. I lost taste and smell. Wow. Okay, so I lost the smell. I lost the taste.
That happened Saturday?
Yes. Okay. So that happened Saturday morning. I'm saying to myself, like, what's going on? Why can I not taste anything? But at this moment, I'm saying to myself, like, how can I have the coronavirus if – like I can taste, taste anything, but I feel fine. You
fever,
know, like
no fever yet.
No fever yet. No nothing. Okay. So Sunday morning, it hits me.
Wow.
Like I'm feeling horrible. Like bad. Like I'm just congested, nose can't taste, body aches. I'm like, that's all I'm having is body aches. Like. I don't know if I had a fever because I didn't have a thermometer. Wow. So I couldn't tell, but I would touch my head one more, like 3 hours, I would turn hot and then I'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't have no problem. Like I wouldn't be burning up anymore.
Right.
So I went to urgent care, which my insurance covers anything from COVID. They covered it at 100%. So testing or anything. So I went to urgent care, they put it in my nose. So it took them like all the way till Friday to find out my result, and then which came back positive. COVID virus.
So you didn't find a positive result from feeling sick Monday. You went all the way to Saturday, Sunday feeling bad. Then you went to go get the test one?
On that Sunday.
On that Sunday when you were feeling bad. Then you didn't find out you had it until Friday. Now, when you started feeling bad was Monday, so you didn't know about Friday, so a whole week. So technically, the 14 days already passed.
Correct.
That they say.
Yeah, that you have 14 days. Yeah, right. Like, but when you became, so what it looks like that I was asymptomatic from Monday till Friday, which it really, Friday, it really, that's where it really hit.
Wow.
So it really started was that Saturday. You know, that Saturday was pretty much, I would say Friday, Saturday, that's where it really started right. at that time. Mm. So, you know, it was the worst experience that I've ever had. I had chills. My chills would go for 3 hours and then stop, and then I'll be fine. I would have a fever up and down. I would be hot one moment, not hot the next.
So from Sunday, how long did that feeling last?
Oh, so that from Sunday, that went all the way till, I would say, to the following Saturday. So when I started feeling a little bit better. But the where it started scaring me because I was still getting the congestion in my nose. Mm. I didn't have a cough.
Wow.
I didn't even have a dry cough. I had none of that.
Wow.
So that's why where I was just saying to myself, like, do I really have the coronavirus?
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So Friday they came back, they told me that I was positive.
Right.
So when they told me that, I was kind of crushed. I was hurt. I was scared. It put me in a dark place, man. It put you with a big fear factor. You're right. Seeing people die. You're seeing your closest friends die. Right. And you're saying, you know, what are you going to do with your life? Like, I was wishing my family goodbyes because on that Saturday, I couldn't inhale. So I would, you know, a doctor would tell you, breathe in and breathe out. Mm-hmm. Every single time I try to breathe in, I was coughing.
Wow.
Like, if I try to do it a little bit, like, and I start coughing. It's like anytime I try to bring lungs into, like, air into my lungs,
right?
I would just start coughing.
Oh.
You know, but I didn't have shortness of breath. So what I started doing was I would walk outside, you know, because of what the doctors were saying, that if you were shortness of breath, if you walk one flight of stairs, it feels like you ran a marathon. That's how it's supposed to feel, the shortness of breathing.
Right.
People don't know that. So they have to understand that if you get shortness of breathing and you start walking from like one flight of stairs on one side of the room to the other and you feel like you ran a marathon, you need to go to the hospital right away, period. Okay? Yeah. And there's another thing which a lot of people don't understand about when you have the coronavirus is that do not go to the hospital if you don't have shortness of breath. Because the only thing they're going to do is they're going to discharge you and they can't do nothing for you until you get shortness of breathing.
Because you're a walking Petri dish.
Correct. And you shouldn't go to the hospital because unless you have shortness of breathing, because you might not have the coronavirus and you might end up catching the coronavirus. You might have just allergy or you might have a sinus infection or you might have a cold. So there's a number of things that you could have had, but now had the coronavirus. And now you go into a part, you know, into the hospital where all these people have the coronavirus and you're going to end up getting it too. So that was pretty much my experience. I took a lot of orange juice, a lot of soup, a lot of vitamins, both vitamin C. I was taking 1,000 milligrams a day. I bought Theraflu. The best thing that really helped me when it came down to the headache and the fever, I took Tylenol extra strength with the red, gray, and blue caps. That did me wonders. That helped me a lot with the coronavirus.
Wow. Wow. Incredible, man. That's an incredible thing that you went through.
Man, I'm happy to be alive. Because
yeah, we're happy that you're alive too, man. So the future for DJ Casper, what is, what would you like to do, man? What would you, I mean, now you've been through so much. I mean, you've toured the world, you've done a lot, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I can tell you is that maybe I need to I really want to lose some weight. I want to get back to because I'm like
260. That goes back to the beginning of the show.
Yeah. I want to get back to you know, the 250 mark, but this pandemic is not helping.
It's not helping
at all. You know, I've pretty much done everything, and I can say to this day, which, you know, me and you were discussing about me retiring mm-hmm. from DJing because I don't think I have it anymore. You got to remember, with every DJ, you have generations, different generations, new generations. Now it's the time for a newer generation to come in and do what they got to do. Mm-hmm. Because as a DJ and what I've experienced in a lot of clubs lately, I've seen a lot of, how you say, a lot of newer generation don't like the old school reggaeton, don't like the salsa, don't like la merengue, the bachata, they love the bachata. They want the Bad Bunnies, the Osunas, mm-hmm. the Mike Towers. That's who they want. Yep. You know, they want, you know, the hip-hop, they want the Drake, they want the Future. That's what they want to hear nowadays. Back in the day, we used to party.
Right.
But it was a club. Like, when, like this whole, let me tell you something, this whole bottle standing on a couch, that all originated in Miami.
Yeah.
All that originated. Then it came into New York City. You know, people standing on couches. But back in the day, it was Usher, Yeah, Yeah, Shake It Like a Soul Shaker. Every song was party. Now, everybody's just wanting trap music. You know, when was the last time you really saw in a club people, a good club, people actually dancing? Unless it was dancing to reggaeton.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they put on that hip hop joint, everybody becomes ratchet. And and when it becomes ratchet, fights to happen. Well, that's it.
You're just not liking the new scene.
Definitely not liking the new scene, man. I was so always about, you know, partying, dancing, meeting a girl. Come on, man, we're guys, you know, and you know how some girls like to back it up sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we came up on. That's what we grew up on was, you know, perreo, you know, the reggaeton, the reggae. Look, I played some reggae in the nightclub. They don't know what the hell is Murder, She Wrote. They don't know Limb by Limb. I'm like, they don't even know what that is. Mm-hmm. And I mean, big up to a lot of people that love the salsa. But the worst thing that I hate is when I do a venue and I got people asking me for salsa or people dancing reggaeton and dancing salsa to reggaeton.
Yeah.
Like, I hate that. Like, I hate when I see people dancing salsa while reggaeton is playing.
And then you play salsa for them. And then you play salsa for them and they don't dance.
Exactly. And that's worse. And that's why what frustrates you the most. And that's why if you support a DJ, if you're going to support a DJ, make sure if you hear the salsa, you get up.
Yeah.
Because if the DJ sees that nobody's dancing it, the second time around, he's not going to play it.
It's a song. It's a famous song. It's a Fania All-Star song. And I'm sure it's an older Cuban song, too, that they redid for the Fania All-Stars. Andy Montañez sings it. It's called El Que Baila Gana. It's who's dancing wins. You know what I mean? And that's the name of the game when the DJ's playing, man. Whoever's dancing their favorite kind of music is, guess what? They're going to get more of that music because you know why? They're participating in the party. You know, it is.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%. You know, a lot of people, they don't understand that, you know. And I hate when girls come up to you and say, oh, play something good. I'm like, everybody's dancing. What do you mean to play something good? Everybody, you see everybody's dancing. It irritates me. It frustrates me.
That's the universal debate, the universal bind, the play something that I could dance to.
Yeah, like it's crazy, but it is what it is.
Yeah, man. It's wild, man. I appreciate you coming on the show and telling us all your experiences and dropping the DJ knowledge, man, because you got decades in the game.
Big shout to Giovanni. That's another. He's an artist out of Kentucky. He does also. He's starting to do a lot of gospel. Respect to him on that.
Cool.
Giovanni, his brother, Javi, super cool. They're from Kentucky, but super good artist. I love his music. But like I said, you know, New York City's struggling right now. New Jersey struggling with this coronavirus. Yesterday we had about 1,000 new cases, 400 people dead as of yesterday. Total amount in New Jersey, we're looking at already in, you know, over 100,000 people with the coronavirus. The death toll in, I think it was like 45,000 on the death toll. New York is even worse. So, you know, we just got to be safe and, you know, hopefully we all can get back to DJing and, Me personally, I don't see any of us DJing anytime soon until maybe another year.
That's what I said. I said another year. I put a warning out on my Facebook page to all the DJs that live off this. I said, listen, if you're living off this and you're still waiting around, it's time to break open plan B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, M, N, O, P. Break them all open and make it happen, because this ain't regular DJing and parties are not going to happen, at least not on a public scale, until winter, if we're lucky.
Yeah, and at winter, they're supposedly saying that it's going to be the worst winter, you know, with the COVID virus. So, yep. I mean, this is a good point somebody made a good point to me. It was like, you know what? You know all those clubs that used to pay you by check and you had to fill a $10.99?
Yeah.
Well, this was actually the best way for you to actually get unemployment, because right now they're passing that act where you can collect unemployment if you had gigs.
Right.
But you have to have filed taxes. So if you were DJing at a club that you was a resident last year or the year before, and you was a resident and you made over $10,000 through that year, yo, you could have literally collected unemployment and you would have got unemployment and $600 extra in New Jersey. That's crazy. Wow. So now some of you might even think and say, hey, I'm going to end up going and tell them, give them 1099s, because you run into that situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
That money could have came in hand. But if you were getting all cash, I feel bad for a lot of DJs who this was their livelihood. Yeah,
that's why I never shied. As soon as I figured out the 1099 game, I never shied away from it, because I was like, you know, it's going to come in handy one day.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. 100%.
You know, when I got to prove it, you know, the making this money, you know. So, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. Is there anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, man. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great time. Pretty fast hour, but it was good. We laid a couple of things.
Yeah, man.
You know, and we just got to be safe out there. And thank you for everybody who, you know, was on the chat. You know, was listening, tuned in, and just being supportive.
All right, excellent, man. The audio is going to go up on my podcast feed. It's going to be up on Spotify. It's going to be on La Mezcla Music App. It's going to be on the Mixcloud. It's going to be everywhere. So thank you so much, man, for hanging out with me here in the lounge. You like my new man cave? I got my nerd posters up.
Yeah, man. I know you're a big comic book collector.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's up with that, man. And like I said, man, keep doing what you're doing, man. Thank you, brother. Keep hustling and just keep the positivity in your mind, and just stay safe, and
you too, man.
And just enjoy you know, the small time that we have at home, but because once everything opens back up, we gotta be doing some other things, making more money, you know.
Yeah, I hear you, man. And you stay safe, man, and take care of your family and your friends, and thank you for hanging out with me. I really appreciate you hanging out, and we'll talk soon.
All right, brother. Take it easy. Be good. Bye.